WML News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Wes Moore projected to win the Democratic nomination for governor in Maryland, according to the Associated Press. Of course, mail-in ballots are still being counted, so these results are not official. The author and former CEO of an anti-poverty nonprofit, beating out former U.S. Labor Secretary and ex-Democratic National Committee Chair Tom Perez. This November, Moore will go up against Republican State Delegate Dan Cox. And the race for Montgomery County Executive continues to be neck and neck. The latest unofficial results from the State Board of Elections have incumbent Mark Elrich beating out challenger David Blair with 39.3 to 38.97% of the vote. Former President Trump sounding more and more like a candidate in the 2024 presidential race, according to Fox's Jack Callahan.
Telling a campaign rally for Republicans in Arizona last night.
In 2024, most importantly, we are going to take back our beautiful, magnificent White House.
And Mr. Trump did not announce any plans. Jack Callahan, Fox News.
We're going to swelter today.
High temperatures today into the mid and upper 90s. It will feel like over 100 degrees.
7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett says tomorrow will be even hotter with high temps in the upper 90s to near 100. Liggett says we haven't hit 100 in D.C. since 2016. And as temperatures soar, D.C.'s heat emergency plans in effect.
A big concern, heat stroke. D.C. Fire and EMS Sergeant Holly O'Byrne.
People often present very confused or unconscious where you can't wake them up. They're not aware to who they are, where they are, or what they're doing.
The city's deputy mayor urging people to check on their neighbors.
People in their neighborhoods know the folks in their neighborhoods, know where we have folks that are vulnerable to heat.
A number of swimming pools have extended hours. There are also 34 spray parks throughout the city. Rachel Sutherland on WMAL and WMAL.com.
Former Trump advisor Steve Bannon's legal team planning an appeal today after a jury found their client guilty of contempt. Fox's Lauren Blanchard.
A 5-day trial and 2 guilty verdicts by a jury.
We may have lost a battle here today, but we're not going to lose this war.
Steve Bannon, a former strategist for the Trump administration, has been convicted of contempt of Congress. He faced 2 counts, one for refusing a subpoena to appear for a deposition with the January 6th House Select Committee, and another for failing to provide documents. The Justice Department prosecutors writing, "The subpoena to Stephen Bannon was not an invitation that could be rejected or ignored."
Bannon expected to be sentenced October 21st. He faces up to 2 years behind bars. A convicted murderer is arrested again after being released 6 years into a 50-year sentence.
Convicted killer Andrew Cacci was arrested on the streets of L.A. this week after leading police on a car chase while illegally carrying a gun and drugs. In 2016, California voters passed Proposition 57 that gave convicted felons the chance to seek shorter sentences as juveniles. Cacci.
Fox's Jonathan Hunt. WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Diamondbacks. Traffic and weather next. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Here's the latest for traffic. In Virginia, I just looked at the cameras around the Virginia Beltway, inner loop and outer loop, no construction or crashes. In Fairfax County on 66, you're not tapping the brakes eastbound or westbound. Nothing in the road is going to slow you down. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not hitting the brakes north or south. All lanes are clear. And in D.C., on 295, 395, and 695, no reports of any crashes or construction. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies on this Saturday. Hazy, hot, and humid. High temperatures in the mid to upper 90s. Can't rule out a few isolated storms late this afternoon and evening, mainly along and west of the Blue Ridge. Later on tonight, lows back in the 70s as we head towards your Sunday. Even hotter. High temperatures in the upper 90s to near 100 degrees under mostly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL,
the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL. Hour 2 of the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi is with us each week. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax TV and Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
I want to take you back to a headline in the Los Angeles Times, November 16th of 2021. The headline is, Bannon's indictment for contempt of Congress swims against the historical tide. It was the first indictment on contempt since 1983, and it goes back a lot further to the last conviction for contempt of Congress. But that all changed on Friday.
It certainly did. At 3 o'clock on Friday, a jury announced its decision that Steve Bannon, former top political advisor to President Trump and counselor to the president in the White House, was guilty on two counts of contempt of Congress. What this has to do is his failure to respond to a subpoena requiring him to testify before the January 6th commission or to provide documents that the commission wanted in its pursuit of evidence surrounding the assault on the Capitol that day. Now, one thing should be pointed out. This was a five-day trial. It took the jury a matter of hours over a two-day period to reach this verdict. Contempt of Congress is something, while common after World War II, in hearings about alleged communist influence in the federal government or the film industry, sent more than a few people to prison. Over the years, it's faded as congressional investigations dealt with less serious matters. The last person to be indicted for contempt of Congress was Rita Lavelle, an official of the Environmental Protection Agency, and this was part of an investigation that was focused on her boss, then Administrator Ann Gorsuch. That's right, mother of the current Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch. To go back to a conviction, one has to go back to Watergate and someone that we buried just last year, G. Gordon Liddy. He refused to cooperate with anyone, be it federal judge or Senate investigating committee. When he was asked if he would tell the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth, Liddy simply said no. He was indicted for contempt of Congress and later convicted of it. Former Attorney General Dick Kleindienst also pled guilty to that and received a suspended sentence. All told, this is something that's coming from the dim and distant past. The very fact that all of the names of the last convictions, that is, Liddy and Kleindienst, are dead, speaks volumes about it. Could it be selective prosecution? I don't know. October 21st is the date that Mr. Bannon will be sentenced, and his lawyers will certainly appeal. As one who has watched this process over the years, this reporter bets, in the end, Bannon walks.
Well, the big story out of the White House on Thursday, the announcement of President Joe Biden and his diagnosis with COVID. In the briefing on Thursday and Friday, information was given out by the White House press secretary and the White House COVID advisor, but not the president's personal physician. My recollection is when President Trump had COVID, that the president's physician was front and center. Any reason for the change this time?
No one really understands that, except it was President Biden himself who went before the cameras on Thursday to say he was feeling fine, but he was diagnosed with COVID. He would be working while he quarantined. And the White House apparently felt that was enough. It does stand in contrast to previous presidents when they've been ill and their physician, as you say, has been front and center. George H.W. Bush went in the hospital for a brief time after a collapse while he was jogging. And we saw his physician, the late Dr. Burton Lee, talking to reporters and answering questions about his condition. The same was true with President Reagan when he was shot. Although he had a number of people speaking for him at the time, including White House staffers. It all depends on the circumstances, but it's usually the call of the chief of staff. So in this case, I'm guessing it was Ron Klain who said, let him speak for himself, and then we'll do a briefing. As of late Friday, the White House's word on the president's condition, he's fine.
We saw dueling rallies in Arizona in the last 24 hours between Donald Trump and Mike Pence. Earlier in the week, it was dueling gubernatorial candidates between Donald Trump and Larry Hogan.
Well, it's undecided in Arizona, where Donald Trump is backing one candidate and Mike Pence is arriving in the Grand Canyon state to campaign for another. Stay tuned on that one. But in Maryland, it was Trump by a knockout. His candidate, State Delegate Dan Cox, defeated the anointed successor of termed-out Governor Larry Hogan with nearly 60% of the vote. Commerce and Labor Secretary Kathy Schultz had the vigorous support of Hogan and his organization. But Cox ran as a hardcore Trumpster, denouncing Hogan for the unpopular and long lockdown in the free state, and running as a strong pro-life candidate, a law and order candidate, an opponent of illegal immigration. In other words, he preached from the gospel according to Trump. And that was enough with the grassroots. I talked to a top Maryland Republican who said that Larry Hogan was humiliated by Donald Trump and Dan Cox, and he should have spent more time campaigning for Kathy Schultz than he spent in New Hampshire, the governor hinting that he may take a run at the presidency himself in 24. Clearly, the odds on that went down on Tuesday.
Well, that's not the only Hogan in the Maryland races this week.
No, it's not. Jamie Sterling, a career prosecutor and one of the governor's three daughters, won the all-important Republican primary for state's attorney in St. Mary's County. Mrs. Sterling, daughter of Larry Hogan, rolled up 71% of the vote against 26-year incumbent Richard Fritz, the Republican primary being tantamount to election. Now, there's already talk of this next generation of Hogans running for higher office. She simply said she wanted to be a good prosecutor. She'd resigned as an assistant to Fritz over what she considered his heavy handling of the office, but we're sure to hear from her. Governor Hogan had a bad night in the statewide primary, but personally, he's very proud.
We're seeing a lot of political turmoil here in the U.S., especially with the January 6th hearings. We just saw political turmoil in the U.K. Now you got political turmoil in Italy. Tell us about it and what it means to the U.S.
On Thursday afternoon, the man that Italians and many Europeans called Super Mario hanged up his cape and tights. Mario Draghi, former president of the European Central Bank, someone who got Italian finances in order as premier, decided to resign after failing to win a vote of confidence from Italy's Chamber of Deputies. It was not that they disapproved of his performance, it was that a particular part of his coalition, the Five Star Party, disagreed over small matters involving election and the managing of the bureaucracy. Soon, other parties said they wouldn't work for Five Star, and in the end, Draghi offered his resignation to solve the problem, but he just could not get that vote of confidence, so he's out. Italy will have elections on September 25th, and interestingly, the polls show that the leading party, the right-of-center party, is ahead of everyone else. They're called the Brothers of Italy, but they're headed by a sister, Giorgina Meloni, often called the Donald Trump of Italy. She takes hard stands on illegal immigration. She was a fan of Vladimir Putin's until the Ukrainian invasion, and she is someone who has caught the public imagination for being outspoken. We'll hear a lot about her and others, including a comeback attempt by the former Prime Minister of Italy, Silvio Berlusconi, now 86 and going strong.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, thank you very much. Stay cool.
Always a pleasure, Rick. I'll stay very cool. You're a cool guy yourself.
All right. Thank you, John. Hey, there's a Chyron, the lower third, up on the screen on CNN this morning. Boss fans balk at bloated Ticketmaster prices. That's for the Springsteen concert. Also says sticker shock. Well, we got a bargain for you. Wolf Trap tickets are a cheap date. And we'll talk to Mike Love, lead singer of the Beach Boys. They'll be there August 28th. We'll talk to him next about it. First off, though, Al Beebe's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Good morning. On the Beltway in Maryland, in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, looking at the traffic cameras, I didn't see any crashes, and I don't have any reports of any construction being set up yet. Lanes are at the posted speed limit. In Montgomery County on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not tapping the brakes on the northbound side or on the southbound side. In Prince George's County between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway and 95, I don't have any reports of anything in the roadway to slow you down northbound or southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A fair amount of sunshine on this Saturday, but also plenty of heat for the start of the weekend. High temperatures today into the mid and upper 90s. It will feel like over 100 degrees. Now, later on this afternoon and evening, some isolated storms possible, mainly west of the Blue Ridge. As we head later on tonight, lows back in the 70s, even hotter on Sunday. We are expecting highs into the upper 90s, some spots closer to 100 degrees. We haven't hit 100 in D.C. since 2016. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
77 degrees at 7:20 on the Saturday Morning Update. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL, and along with summer, the Beach Boys are coming. They will be at Wolf Trap on Sunday afternoon, August 28th, 3 o'clock show, and we are joined by the lead singer, founder of the Beach Boys, Mike Love. Great to have you back with us on WMAL.
Thank you, Rick.
Well, it is an annual tradition at Wolf Trap that has been impacted by COVID recently, but great to have you back now. So it's a Sunday afternoon show at Wolf Trap, the perfect venue. With the COVID impact on your touring recently, it must be great to get back out on the road.
Well, first of all, we couldn't be happier than getting back to Wolf Trap. It is, as you said, the perfect setting to see the Beach Boys. And it's such a wonderful facility, the venue itself with the pavilion and the lawn. And it's always a party on the lawn, but those pavilion seats are precious. And I'm not going to say we've been there several times, but Vice President Pence came along with his friends and his wife and stuff. So, yeah, it's a little different these days, but we're still looking forward to it. And I don't know if John Stamos will be with us, but he loves to come out, and everybody loves the stage at Wolf Trap. It's a beautiful big stage. It's wonderful sight lines for everybody, and it is a summertime party.
Typically, when a politician shows up for an event, it's a drive-by, and they're there long enough to shake some hands and move out. But my understanding is, even though he was vice president at the time, he was there for the whole two-hour show.
No, they had a good time. And the audience was spectacular, of course. It's always wonderful being there. But it's kind of in line with our album Sounds of Summer, which came out many years ago and sold a few million copies. We're celebrating 60 years of the Sounds of Summer, along with the original album with all 30 songs on it, plus two companion CDs. So there's a depth and breadth of music there to be enjoyed in honor of our 60th anniversary.
So that's your new collection out this summer from Capitol Records. And it's my understanding that when you put that original Greatest Hits collection together 30 years ago, you were actually sitting on the beach at Pacific Palisades, just below Malibu, with a legal pad.
That's right. I was overlooking the ocean when I wrote out the set list. And we had a little lively discussion with Capitol Records, who actually put it out. But when I do a set list for a show, I try to make every song complement the next, and different moods and different tempos and different subject matters kind of go well. Like when we start, I like to start and get retro with the surfing songs, Surfing Safari, Surfing USA, and Catch a Wave, and others, you know. And then the car songs with 409 and Shut Down and I Get Around and Fun, all those songs. And so for years of doing concerts, and the running order of the concert, I try to take that type of thinking and apply it to the Sounds of Summer running order. And so I think we achieved, 97.5% of our desires. And it's a great album. Everybody knows the songs on it. It's got everything from Surf and Safari to Kokomo and all things in between.
One of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show this weekend is that the pavilion seats for the Beach Boys show on August 28th are almost gone. So if you're thinking about going out to the show, if you want to get pavilion seats, better do that very quickly because they're just about out. But, of course, the lawn is always a party at Wolf Trap.
Yeah, anywhere in the venue will be fine. You'll have a good time. Even the ushers and usherettes or whatever, the usher persons, they have a good time. The whole audience is and the whole event is a lot of fun, and probably because we look forward to it so much. Kind of like the epitome of a summer celebration for us is to come back to Wolf Trap.
And the cool thing about the lawn is you have five-year-old kids dancing with their parents and with their parents' parents. So it's something the whole family can enjoy.
Yeah, that's the sweetest part of what we do is seeing entire families come out and enjoy themselves. And what could be a better Sunday afternoon than the Beach Boys at Wolf Trap? So we invite everybody to come out. If you want to sit in the pavilion, you better act now. But because they're going pretty quickly, and there'll always be room on the lawn. Actually, they've cut it off a couple of times. It's been so successful, our appearances there, that they've actually stopped selling tickets a couple of times over the years. But right now, we're not at that stage, so you're still tickets available. I hope everybody shows up, and I know we're going to have a great time together.
Tell us what it was like after working every summer to have to go off the road due to COVID.
It was a real bummer not being able to do concerts. We had the busiest season ever a couple of years back when COVID knocked everybody out, including us. So we all did a song together called This Too Shall Pass. Even though we didn't step in the same studio because of technology, we were able to do all of our parts. And I wrote the song, and we sent all the information to John Stamos, who did the video on a song called This Too Shall Pass. And sometimes we do it in concert, and it's just a light at the end of the tunnel, giving the reality being that, society's been through all kinds of ups and downs over the years, and that it's a never-ending, battle between right and left and good and bad and up and down. It's a constant thing. But our music has always been so upbeat and positive that in the midst of anything and everything, we've been able to find something positive, so that was the premise of This Too Shall Pass, and we often do it in concert, and it's pretty cool. People can relate to it. People are wondering how long it'll last. As the saying goes, this too shall pass. I believe the best is yet to come, and we'll get back to having fun in the sun.
Beach Boys, Sunday afternoon, August 28th, 3 o'clock, Wolf Trap. Mike Love, lead singer, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Rick.
WolfTrap.org for the tickets. 7:27, the Saturday morning update. Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland are coming up.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. The candidates for governor in Maryland now set. The Associated Press calling the Democratic race for author and former nonprofit CEO Wes Moore. He beat out ex-Democratic National Committee Chair Tom Perez. Of course, these results are unofficial since mail-in ballots are still being counted. Moore will go up against Republican State Delegate Dan Cox, who was declared the winner of his primary earlier this week. If you like the heat, you'll love this weekend's forecast. High temps will be in the mid to upper 90s today. It will feel like over 100, according to 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett.
So we head later on tonight, lows back in the 70s, even hotter on Sunday. We are expecting highs into the upper 90s, some spots closer to 100 degrees.
A temperature Liggett says the district hasn't seen since 2016. Gas prices are going down. If you fill up your tank in our region today, you'll pay an average of $4.40 a gallon for regular. That's down from a record high of $5.06 in mid-June. President Biden calling on oil companies to do more to help.
I'm telling the industry, You're making record profits due to Putin's war in Ukraine. Use those profits to increase production and refining. Don't use those profits to buy back your stocks and dividends.
But Biden says the real answer is to get a clean energy economy as soon as possible. WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Diamondbacks. Up next, traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Here's the latest with traffic. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, looked at the cameras around the Beltway. I didn't see any crashes. I don't have any reports of any construction being set up yet. Inner Loop and Outer Loop are at the posted speed limit. Now in Fairfax County on 66, you're not hitting the brakes on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. Nothing in the road is going to slow you down. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're at speed both northbound and southbound. And finally in D.C., on 295, 395, and 695, no crashes or construction there. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny and hot on this Saturday. High temperatures in the mid to upper 90s. A few isolated storms possible later on this evening west of D.C. Lows tonight back in the 70s as we head towards Sunday. Mostly sunny skies. High temperatures near 100 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
7:36, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart and a former CIA-trained intel officer. Good morning, Tony.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
Well, the news breaking late yesterday, the deal between Russia and Ukraine, the deal over grain, and it was brokered in part by the United Nations, and we've talked about the importance of the grain shipments, but run us through what this means in terms of the global security moving forward.
Well, the real winner here is Turkey. Turkey was the one who primarily brokered it, and they'll be the ones who will be monitoring and managing the process of ships going through the Bosphorus Straits and monitoring to make sure that weapons and things like that aren't going through on these ships. And the good news is for the globe, theoretically, that is, if everybody agrees to maintain the elements of the agreement, is to allow for these literally tens of millions of tons of grain that's been otherwise stuck in Ukraine to come out. Plus, another part of the agreement, which has not been touted, but is, I think, equally important, is the issue of fertilizer. And that's going to be Russian fertilizer that is allowed to come out as well. So it's good news for both sides economically. And I think this is a good reminder to have everybody acknowledge the fact that this war is still about economics, and the fact that we're setting aside, they're going to set aside these issues and allow for commerce to happen is good by the fact that it takes away another excuse that Joe Biden's been using to say that there's going to be insecurity and increased cost of everything. This is going to help prevent and reduce that. And Rick, we talked about this several times, the actual flash to bang, that is to say the time that the effects of this grain and these fertilizers being on market is not going to be felt till next spring. So this is not going to have any immediate effect, but I think it's something that long-term is going to help. And obviously, I'd like to believe this is a good sign to the overall war, where you have people acknowledging that there's a need to find a negotiated path forward. The best thing the United States did in this case was to stay completely out of it and allow those parties to negotiate and find a path forward. And that's true. That's absolutely true.
In spite of the grain deal, Russia launching intensive missile strikes overnight, and President Zelensky is downplaying the potential for a ceasefire. The First Lady of Ukraine in Washington this week, and among her tasks was to request more weaponry. President Biden signing off on more weapons. What did she ask for, and what did she get?
So I think at this point they're asking for primarily the same things they've received to date. Javelin missiles and a number of classes of anti-tank missiles have been very effective. I tend to believe, Rick, that based on what I've read so far, while I think they would like more advanced weapon systems, and there's talks of sending A-10 aircraft and several other things, which, you know, it's always interesting people talk about this, like, oh, we'll just send them over. It's like, Yeah, you've got to figure out logistics. You've got to figure out resupply. You've got to figure out training. It's not simply sending things over. It's a whole series of things that go with it. So my belief is most of what's going to be provided are weapons which are already in use in some form. People are already trained, and they've been showing a great effect on the battlefield. So I don't think there's going to be an expansion to the point of what we talked about, the fact that there's some level of negotiation. I don't think the United States wants to expand its support to the point of where the Russians, again, start threatening the United States and with the belief that we're going to expand to do more. So I think right now at this point it'll be kind of more the same with very little change regarding the types. With that said, the Russians are going to continue to pound the areas of the Donbass that they're already in. And I think inevitably, unless there is some change in the direction of war, and that means with weapon systems as well, the Russians will continue to gain and eventually overwhelm the Ukrainians in that region towards the end of the year.
I want to turn to President Biden in Somerset, Massachusetts this week. He went up there to speak about climate change and the, quote, emergency, the climate emergency. And he said he will look at it that way. So he flies Air Force One up to Somerset, Massachusetts to talk about climate change. I want to talk about the carbon footprint he left. And, you know, you're around those circles. Tell us, not only are we talking about Air Force One, tell us what else had to go to Massachusetts and the type of fuel consumption and the carbon footprint that was left for that trip to talk about a climate emergency.
Right. Well, 2 points just to begin with. I actually have a degree in environmental studies, and I do actually, I'm considered an expert on this. And I'm just to point out, CO2, carbon, is simply plant food. It's not a pollutant. With that said, if you do want to use that as a measure of environmental impact, the carbon footprint was huge. The president always has at least 2 C-17s available. They always fly around with them with all the gear and equipment. They don't take the Beast, for example, and drive that thing up 95 to the event. They actually fly it in the back of these things, and within the context of that, you've got a huge entourage of vehicles. These things, I don't know, Rick, you and I have seen them being around Washington. You know, we will occasionally see one of these things come driving through the city, one of these motorcades. These motorcades are at least a half a mile long, and you've got within the motorcade all manner of vehicles, everything from ambulances to tactical response vehicles, anything you can think of. And then on top of that, you have Air Force One. You've got to fly them around on Air Force One. There's always two of those available as well. So if you just look at it pragmatically, the very thing he's saying is a challenge. He's violating completely across the board. But just remember that most of the folks who tout this, Barack Obama most particular, actually still have these huge estates on beaches where you would think, if they're really worried about climate change and ocean levels rising, they wouldn't have their homes. So I'm just pointing out there's a real hypocrisy that is present on the left regarding this issue. And again, I'm one who studied it. The planet can absorb CO2. There's nothing out of the ordinary at this point. Geologic time is what we should be looking at regarding these effects. But again, Rick, if you want to use CO2 as a measure, the whole event from top to bottom that Biden conducted was completely phony and very much a hypocrisy. So,
you know, they could have ridden three blocks over to the Washington Monument on their bicycles. I mean, Biden has a bicycle. We saw that a couple of weeks ago. Secretary Buttigieg has a bicycle. We saw that the Secret Service actually put it in the back of one of their vehicles and drive it into the White House grounds so he could ride the 100 feet over to the entrance for a press opportunity, right, a photo op. But the guys could have done that on their bicycles. Secret Service has bicycles. I mean, you know, they could have done this with no carbon footprint. But.
Well, I think Biden should have really gotten out there on one of those adult-sized big wheels, you know, those three-wheeler things that we had as kids. That would make a statement.
Yeah, well, he needs three wheels these days.
He does.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Thought to Action podcast at LondonCenter.org. What's on this week?
So we're doing a thing on culture and media war. We actually have Cherry Curry of the Runaways and Jenny Mathias of the Bell Stars from the 80s. We're doing kind of a retro show with rock and roll legends talking about the culture war. So I think people will learn a lot from it and enjoy it.
Thank you very much, Tony. 7:45 Saturday morning update. KT McFarland is next, but first, LBD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Maryland, so far so good on the Beltway, both in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. No crashes or construction on the inner loop or on the outer loop. In Montgomery County on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not hitting the brakes on the northbound side or on the southbound side. In Prince George's County, between the two beltways on 95 and the BW Parkway, lanes are clear and at speed. And in Prince George's County on Route 50, between the beltway and the Bay Bridge, eastbound and westbound lanes, all lanes are clear and at the posted speed limit. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies on this Saturday. Hazy, hot, and humid. High temperatures in the mid to upper 90s. Can't rule out a few isolated storms late this afternoon and evening, mainly along and west of the Blue Ridge. Later on tonight, lows back in the 70s as we head towards your Sunday. Even hotter. High temperatures in the upper 90s to near 100 degrees under mostly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
76 degrees in the nation's capital. 7:47 Saturday morning update.
Know the news the minute you wake up. O'Connor and Company with Larry O'Connor. 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
7:51 Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us. President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, board member of the American Conservative Union, and of course, the author of the bestseller, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, always an honor to have you with us.
Well, it's an honor and a pleasure. Thank you, Rick.
And what some folks may not know is that you were an aide to Henry Kissinger during the Nixon administration. And I thought about this. I saw Dr. Kissinger doing an interview recently on his new book. And you always have a way of putting things in perspective for us. And I thought it would be helpful just as we look at the globe and think about your relationship with Dr. Kissinger, you know, how things are in the world today and moving forward, what do we do?
Well, you're sweet to say that. Henry Kissinger sent me a copy of his new book this week, and I sat down to read it. It's a series of profiles of post-World War II leaders. And I, just as a proud aside, he inscribed it so beautifully. He thanked me for being with him on much of his journey. And anyway, but it got me to thinking about American presidents, not just world leaders, but American presidents, about, you know, the health, the appearance, the temperament of American presidents has often been throughout our history the symbol of what's going on in America and our place in the world. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt in the early 1900s, young, robust, athletic, optimistic, a new leader for a new age, and helped carve America's role in the world as a new world leader. Excuse me. FDR, during the Depression and World War II, steadfast, perseverant through these hardships, but ultimately triumphant. Nixon, cunning, remaking the international order, but never loved or admired at home or abroad. Reagan, who comes in the 1980s, a seasoned senior leader, optimistic, a true believer in the average American and the common sense of the average American and in democracy and in our purpose in the world. And yet he was very shrewd about achieving the seemingly impossible goals that he had set for America and succeeded beyond anyone's expectations of remaking the American economy, remaking the world, ending up with America as the sole superpower and the main determinant of world events. And so coming forward to today, Trump, he shook up everything at home and abroad. It was the shock therapy that we needed, I think we needed in this country and America needed in the world. It was especially told about and forewarned the growing threat of China, which now seems to be pretty commonly accepted by all political parties at home and abroad. But when I think of Biden, you know, he's old, he's frail, he's increasingly irrelevant, he personally increasingly irrelevant in the U.S. and in world affairs. It's the guys who write the words on the teleprompter who matter. It's the invisible, unelected, permanent bureaucracy in Washington establishment that in the Biden administration and in today's America, they wield all the power. They have none of the accountability, but they'll go to any lengths, even weaponizing the federal government in order to keep themselves in power. So I look at this period like as Kissinger looks at the sweep of history in the last 100 years. And I say, look, we all know that Biden's plan isn't working. I mean, maybe not inside the Beltway. It's working just fine for them. But for the rest of the country, it's not working. The economy isn't working. The cultural wars are not working. The wokeism isn't working. America's reestablishment of a world power isn't working. We all know that we're on the verge of something really big happening in 2024.
Apparently, President Biden is almost a lame duck, and we're not even into the midterms. And he keeps saying that he's going to run again. He has to, or else he's definitely a lame duck if he says he's not going to. What do we look ahead to in 2024 in your perspective?
Well, Biden, of course, is going to say he's running again. It's because all the guys who write the words on the teleprompter, they don't want to lose their positions. So they've got to prop him up and say he's going to run again. But I think we're all at a real turning point. Will we get a new leader like a Reagan who inspires us to greatness, who fixes the economy, restores America's place in the world, but with the attention to detail that it took to carry it out? I mean, Trump was great for ideas, put the tweets aside, but he wasn't great on carrying out the day-to-day boring details of running a country. And I think that we're just a twist of the dial away from returning to greatness. You know, when I wrote my book, one of the things that I did in looking at the long sweep of American history was say, gee, we seem to have these political revolutions every 40 years or so where the existing power structure in Washington just isn't working. It may work for the guys in Washington, but it doesn't work for the rest of the country. And because of our democracy and the way our founding fathers put the power in the hands of the average guy, the average American rises up and says, we've had enough of you guys. And puts in new leaders and changes the country into a new direction. I think we're there right now, and the possibility of fixing America, it's not hard. I talked to a senior economic leader, a man who, a multi-billionaire, who is one of the major energy distributors and suppliers in the United States. He said, you could fix this in 6 months. Once you unleash this miracle of American shale oil and shale natural gas, we become the world's energy superstate. We become the suppliers of energy in the world, and at home, it brings down inflation, it brings down the price of gasoline. You're not paying four times as much as you paid for, you know, groceries as you did a year or two ago. It fixes everything domestically, but it also fixes everything internationally. Because as the world's major source of energy, we don't have to rely on the bad Russians. We don't have to rely on the unreliable Middle East. It could be America, which supplies the world with an abundant source of secure energy. And then finally, it's terrific for the environment because the world is not going to go from fossil fuels to windmills. There's a transition fuel that's needed, and that's clean American natural gas. So if we had a president, Republican or Democrat, who would turn that spigot back on, well, we would be in a strong economic position again, and it would return America to greatness. So who is that leader? Is it an inspirational person? Is it a journeyman leader who gets the job done but doesn't inspire people? Or do we go in a very different direction? That's why the next 2 years are so exciting. We get to choose our destiny all over again. And I sure don't want to have the picture in my mind of Joe Biden after his election goes to a meeting in Europe and all those European leaders slapping him on the back saying, America's back, Joe's back, isn't this great? And I was thinking, back to what? When they said, welcome back to the club of what? This is a club of formerly great powers, of leaders of former nations of supreme importance in the world. You know, Italy, Greece, Germany, France, Britain. I don't want to be in that club. I want my country to be in a very different club. So the next 2 years, we get to decide whether we get that to join that club again, or we get to make our own way in the world and forge our own unique club.
KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. If you've got some time on vacation, it makes a great summer read. KT, thank you so much as always.
Pleasure and an honor.
Thank you. That is it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense will follow the 8 o'clock news here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.